interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
1037 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 1037 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Happy Thursday to you. And it is a Thursday, February 21st edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports. Ben Love live from the Tap Room River Ranch. The famous Clint D inside the 237 Roof Studios. No job too big, too small. Just call Lafayette Roofing, 237-7663. A lot to discuss today. Thankfully, we've got 3 hours here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, to do so. LSU lost, second time in 15 games. A lot of Chicken Little out there. I'm going to tell you to lead off while some of the issues from last night are problematic. And as Will Wade said, could well be the downfall of LSU. Oh, sometime around 3 weeks to a month from now, this guy, in fact, is not falling. I'll lead off with my take on LSU dropping a home conference game to Florida in overtime. You know that we'll talk plenty as well about Zion Williamson, Nike shoes. Well, Nike taking a dip right now in the stock market. Don't know if it's all tied to the Duke star. But everything that unfolded in Durham last night, and I mean quickly after tip-off, what it means for the future for Zion Williamson, college basketball, the NBA, not exactly too early to be thinking about these big-picture topics. And, of course, we're in the midst of baseball season as well. We will talk LSU baseball, UL baseball. We'll get to high school basketball, playoff style. Big show today. And here's who's coming aboard to celebrate with us at 4:30. In his usual spot in the lineup, leading off, our man Hunt Palmer. He's got the Hoops with Hunt podcast, has also started up with our good friend Charlie Hanegriff, Outside the Box, all about LSU baseball. And Hunt's going to be all about that pitching rotation. He'll give us news. Mikhail Hilliard will be out this weekend. Jaden Hill with another opportunity on Sunday. We'll pick apart those topics and more. Hunt Palmer, half past this hour. And our only scheduled guest in hour number one. What's super cool after that, we're going to have two guests that sit in live with me and both for a half hour. I'm telling you, this is how you do it when you want to be on B2BS on a Thursday. You come to the Tap Room. Jeff Horchek, KLFY, is going to do that 5 until 5:30. Then from 6 until 6:30, our good friend Brad Boyd, head basketball coach at Southside High School. I used the phrase pick apart earlier. Wait until you see what Brad and I do with the LHSA boys playoff brackets. We'll go select. We'll go non-select. We'll talk players to watch, upsets that could be in the makings, and the area teams with the best chance to bring hardware back to the Hub City. Loaded up today. Hunt Palmer, Jeff Horchek, and Brad Boyd, all scheduled. Most of them will be here. Whenever you get a chance, you can join us in person. You can also call in 706-01-11. Let's lead with LSU Florida. First off, tip your cap to Michael White. Tip your cap to Kevon Allen. He got hot late, 12 of his 21 points in overtime. And yes, LSU had some vintage performances. Maybe the most active we've seen, Naz Reid, 16 and 15. Skylar Mays, 18 points. But Tremont Waters wasn't his usual self. That alone isn't the only reason that LSU dropped this ball game, although it might be one of the biggest. I'll give you my biggest takeaways from 82-77, Tigers falling in OT. First and foremost, you're probably sick of hearing me harp on this, but for years I wrote about it at Tiger Rag Magazine as the publisher of LSU's scout site. Pace, tempo, and where the scoring is at is really everything to me in college basketball. I know intensity, second effort, all those things are important as well. But if you want to play fast, and that's your MO, you better be able to hit the changeup, the curveball, so to speak, if I'm using a baseball analogy, going into March and then through March. because you can't always play at that breakneck pace. If Georgia, twice already this season, and Florida last night haven't driven that home into your head the way it's been driven into mine, I don't think we're speaking the same language. That was Florida's pace last night. Make no mistake about it. Don't look at the final score. Look at the end of regulation. That was Florida's pace, and the Gators' defense is for real. And so when I say you got to tip your cap, you do. Florida, under Mike White, has won three in a row, and the three games before that, they lost very close contests to Tennessee, Kentucky, and Auburn. This is a Florida team that's getting better, and defensively, they imposed their will in the PMAC last night. And LSU on their end was all too happy to really feed into it. Too many threes. If they're not going, you must abandon. Another big takeaway for me. Occasional overdependence on waters can be costly. It's hard to say, Ben, you need to go away from your best player. I'm not saying that. But if he's 3 of 12 from the field, 2 of 8 from 3, that's not utter disaster. But if LSU's supporting cast isn't getting into it, if they don't have any other real flow in the half court, then you rely too much on waters, and you can pay. And a few weeks ago, I told you this LSU team, I remember saying this on the weekly reboot podcast, LSU is going to be a fairly maddening team once you get into the big dance. When you play these razor-thin margin games, it can go either way late. This one went away from LSU. Waters couldn't rescue them. He wasn't hitting from deep. Javonte Smart, really the same. And that leads me to my third takeaway. Again, this is sort of harking back to pace, but can you win in tight quarters? Because that's what March, not all the time, but against the really good teams, that's what March is about. And this quote I'm going to read to you from Will Wade just sums it up perfectly. We've even got this in soundbite form. This is radio. I'm probably supposed to trot out the sound here, but I think it deserves an emphatic reading. There's a certain type of team that gives us a lot of problems. And whenever our season ends, wherever that is, it's going to end just like this. It's going to be the same way because we just don't have some of that stuff to beat some of these teams, and we're either going to develop that over the next couple of weeks, or that's how it's going to end. It's really that simple. I know LSU lost last night, and there's a lot of hangdog going on, so you may not see it the way that I do, but that's freaking poetry right there from Will Wade, because he is spot on. Georgia, Florida, there's a few other teams around the league. Houston in the second half, which you saw in H-Town back in December. There are certain teams built certain ways with toughness, defensive-minded, maybe a little more experienced. And when you encounter that team, you either learn how to beat them or you will be vanquished in March. So he's exactly right. LSU season will end against a team like that, or it won't. And that's part of the reason I'm telling you it's poetry. That is just motivation personified. That's the way you motivate your team through the press. So I thought that from Wade was appropriate, and I thought it was the right way to go. But here's where I'm going to land the plane for our opening segment today. Here's the other takeaway that I have, and social media is a bad barometer for society at large, so I'll taper my statement a little, understanding that. LSU fans as a whole, potentially, but probably just the vocal minority in reality, aren't quite ready to be educated basketball fans. If you take it personally, well, you may not be in that group. Or you might be the loudmouth and you just don't want to wear that. LSU basketball fans right now, at least the vocal minority, are using the same mentality as football. You can't. You just can't. They aren't the same. What do I mean by that? Take LSU out of the equation. There were six other games last night that involved ranked teams. Number 17, Villanova, lost. Number 18, Louisville, they did too. Number 1, Duke, lost. And number 6, Nevada, lost. It's basketball. It happens. They're going to play 40 of them. LSU, if you look up right now, big picture, is 21-5. They're 11-2 in the conference. And you say what you want, that, yeah, the conference isn't top to bottom a juggernaut. The Tigers have won at Arkansas, at both Mississippi schools, at Kentucky, by the bye for the sixth time ever, they're going to be fine. Now, they better heed Wade's words when it comes to competing against that type of team. But for the Chicken Little crowd out there, it ain't football. It ain't one loss and out. It's a much different sport. Keep that in mind. We're coming right back in. More Bumper to Bumper Sports. Happy to take your phone calls, 706-0111. And the fun for us, it's just begun at the Tap Room River Ranch. Jeff Horchek will be here in person at 5, Brad Boyd at 6. Our show, Exit Stage Left at 7, and from 8 until 11, our good friend Corey Lynn Landry. Live music, no cover charge tonight at the Tap Room River Ranch. B2BS coming right back in on 103.7 The Game.
Winners eat nachos at a ball game and snag a foul ball barehanded without getting a drop of cheese on their shirt. Winners ride home with Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
R-E-L-A-X.
Aaron Rodgers said it. We just repeated it for you here. Bumper to Bumper Sports. Right back to the Tap Room River Ranch on 103.7 The Game. Might need to relax a little bit. If last night got you a little hot and bothered, hate to go Foxworthy on you, but you might be a football fan that hasn't adapted to basketball. Just going to suggest that. And I'm going to move the topic along a little bit. You're welcome to call in on LSU basketball. But I've got another NCAA hoops topic that, frankly, I think is top of mind across the country right now. Zion Williamson. About 30 seconds into last night's battle in Durham, goes down with an injury. And I'm very curious. Tell you what we're going to do. Before I go into the Zion Williamson and asking you about the NC2A, we've got a call now, so slide it in because I know it's about LSU. We'll take it now. To the ARDCO Equipment Hotline, Denny, welcome in. What's your take on last night?
Yeah, I watched the game last night, Ben. I'm not panicking. Like you said, this is college basketball. No one goes undefeated. There are just nights when the best team in the world can't throw it in the ocean, and LSU had one of those nights last night. They didn't shoot very well. They didn't shift over men very well on defense. They especially on the inbound of the ball. I think Florida scored every time they inbounded the ball. We made a lot of mistakes, and we still managed to go into overtime with this team. So I'm not panicking.
Denny, I think that's a measured take, brother. I appreciate the call.
Thank you.
I noticed that as well. Inbounds defense. That was an issue last night for the Tigers. And I'm glad that he called in with that. We'll take more of your takes when it comes to LSU basketball. But let's get down to brass tacks on the Zion Williamson injury, what it means, who's to blame, because it's America. We got to blame somebody, right? CD, the music. Why did he ever come to college? Why is he still in college? He should mutiny. The NCAA shouldn't exist anymore. The hot takes are everywhere right now. And so I'll give you a chance to weigh in. Sink or swim, question of the day is as follows. Does the Zion Williamson injury make you feel any differently about the NCAA? Call us when you're ready. 706-0111. CD, I'm going to be selfish. I'm going to lead with this one today. And this, for me, is a sink. I don't feel any differently about the NCAA. I already thought that they were a bit of a shell organization that had no fangs or teeth. So it doesn't change the way I feel about the NCAA. The one-and-done is a stupid rule that the NBA has mandated, and they don't really care what it's done to their farm system because they don't want their evaluators going to high school gyms. That's the end of the story. They made too many mistakes. They ruined too many lives. They spent too many millions that were eventually flushed down urinals and lost somewhere in clubs and bars. And so, yes, it's a bad situation with the one and done, but I'll be very candid with you. The Zion Williamson injury makes me feel a little differently about Nike, but maybe even more than that, than the mentality of the kid himself. And you know I don't like to go after amateur athletes, but let's be real about one thing. And there's a tremendous article at 247 Sports I'll look up the author's name. I'll give credit later, I promise. But the shoes that Zion was wearing last night and that he wears and frequents are PG 2.5s. The PG stands for Paul George. They are the signature shoe, the latest version of them, for Paul George, now the Oklahoma City Thunder. And here's the thing. These are sales rack, mall-based store type shoes. I'm serious. They retail at $110. And Nike actually is selling them online for $92.50. Anybody that's got kids playing prep basketball right now knows that they usually cost a little more than that. But more than the fact that they're cheap shoes, because that's not necessarily, to me, the biggest issue, they're made for guards. They're explicitly made for guards. Zion Williamson is 6'8" and a refrigerator. The man is 285 pounds. And so whether he wanted to look fly, whether they're the type of shoe he was told by Nike he'd wear when he gets to the association, I don't know. I don't really care. But all of professional athletics, first and foremost, is about taking care of your body. How exactly do you feel like you were doing that last night, Zion? So I hate to take a shot at a kid, but come on now. A guard shoe on 6'8", 285. I feel differently about Nike and maybe more the mentality of a kid who popped those shoes on. Because let's be real about one other thing. He plays at Duke. You know he had never touched those shoes, and nobody ever had before, maybe shoot-arounds. I mentioned the prep kids wearing, you know, sneakers and basketball. Well, they wear them for the entire season. Those were a fresh pair for that game. So it's not like they were, you know, worn in too much. He was wearing the wrong pair of sneakers. At least that's how I see it. CD, I appreciate the catch here. Brad Crawford wrote that story for 247 Sports, and I think he's spot on. But if it makes you feel some kind of way when it comes to the NC2A, we got time for you. 706-0111. Clint, what do you think?
I'm kind of in the same boat as you. It doesn't change my opinion on the NCAA because I still think the NCAA, it's a little less than ideal, especially when it comes to college hoops and the way this thing's kind of set up. But again, that's kind of what you're having to deal with the NBA and their one-and-done rule and all that good stuff. I think that you wound up talking about this incident, and I have to agree with you a lot because of the fact you said it's more on Nike and the shoemakers. Kind of you're having to go bottom barrel and have these guys trot out there with PG 2.5s, or as you called them, basically these are the ones you get at the Shoes for Less type store, basically, as opposed to, oh, you're going to the actual official Nike store to get these shoes that are worth $100 to $200 that are going to wind up lasting you a long time, especially if you're an elite athlete like a Zion Williamson or a Tremont Waters or a Skylar Mays or what have you.
Well, so I'll expound a little bit, and again, we can take a call or two here. Hunt Palmer in about 7 minutes on the program. And we'll switch it over to LSU baseball at that point. Here's my other issue. I have a bit of a problem with the Donovan Mitchells, the Trey Youngs of the world, guys that had to do their 1 year in college, maybe two. Now they're in the association. And they're using this as their platform to say that the NCAA is evil. And, Clint, in general in life, I have a problem with people who pick the wrong item to take their stand on. If you believe in your stance, that's fine, but you can't just randomly choose something that probably isn't all that connected. I mean, what does Dr. Mark Emmert have to do with Zion wearing a pair of guard shoes last night? Absolutely nothing. You're going to say, Ben, he shouldn't have been there in the first place. He could have gone to Europe if he wanted. We have examples of that. Brandon Jennings did that. Kids have done that now. The kid Emmanuel Mudiay, that couldn't get in grades-wise or whatever his issue was at SMU, went to play in China. He's doing okay for the Knickerbockers now, making some real cash. So there are examples if you want to go overseas. But don't tell me that playing for Duke, that brand, the coaching and the training that he's getting, hasn't elevated his stock to where he has been considered now the slam dunk number one overall pick. Don't tell me that. That's ridiculous. So, again, the NCAA is a joke for many of us. Last night wasn't a really good example of why. The fact that people are using this as their jumping off point, all last night, all today, that's a little self-serving to me. And now it's off my chest. We got more time to talk to you after our next interview. LSU baseball off to a 4-0 start. We'll get with Hunt Palmer on that and more when we return. You're listening to B2BS. That's Bumper to Bumper Sports, live from the Tap Room River Ranch on 103.7 The Game.
When it comes to purple and gold baseball, Hunt Palmer is dialed in. Now, back to the Tap Room, where Hunt schools Ben on Maneri's Men on 103.7 The Game.
We need some outside-the-box thinking. We got just the man for that job. Bumper to Bumper Sports. Right back at it on 103.7 The Game, enjoying our stay each and every Thursday at the Tap Room River Ranch. And right now, waiting for us on the Artco Equipment Hotline, it is our good friend Hunt Palmer. And among other things, he is the host, co-host, I should say, of the Outside the Box podcast, 1045ESPN.com. How are you, Hunt?
I'm always good when I talk to you, Ben. That means it's Thursday evening, the week's winding down, the weekend's coming up, and that means some baseball.
Getting even closer to Bud Light time. I know just what you mean. So give me the Hunt Palmer reaction to Cade Beloso going yard, winning the game, come from behind style on Saturday. It was the kid's first career start. He's going to get another one this Friday at first base, but how cool was that and what might it mean for him?
Yeah, that was really cool to see. Obviously for anybody to do that at the box is awesome, but for a freshman to do it in his first start is really special. And I didn't realize until I saw the highlight when I got home, just how low that ball was off the bat. My angle was not perfect, so I saw him hit it, and when I saw the direction, I immediately just went to the right fielder and watched him run out of room and watch the ball land. I didn't really have an appreciation for just how low it was and just how hard he hit it until I saw it on the replay. So just a great swing. He stung three balls in that start. I mean, one was a line out to center, but he struck a single into right field and then obviously turned on that one and put it in the seats to win the game. He's a good hitter, and obviously that's not elite-level pitching, and we have a pretty good understanding that he can handle upper 80s fastballs. It's just, for a freshman, when you get into the SEC and everybody's throwing 91 to 96, how do they handle that? And that'll remain to be seen, but good to see him get off to a great start. And look, a little bit of confidence never hurt anybody.
Well, let's dive into LSU's pitchers, and I'll start with some guys that currently aren't in the weekend rotation, Eric Walker amongst them. Looked pretty good in relief action over the weekend, but his Wednesday start was postponed with everything that happened in the weather in Natchitoches. So what might that mean for Walker and his progression to get, presumably, back toward a weekend starting spot?
Yeah, they really wanted to get him that start up in Natchitoches and get him back on the mound and throwing some more pitches. He just needs more mound time. Had a little bit of a setback in December, so they're not quite ready to go out there and give LSU 5-6 innings. But you know, with more and more pitches, you build that arm strength back up, and you can do that. So we'll see him for sure out of the bullpen probably Friday night once again and try to stretch him out and see if you can't get, you know, three innings out of him. And I'm sure you may see him next week as well and maybe a midweek start. So I thought Eric Walker looked very good. He held the fastball at about 87. The command was very good until he lost it a little bit late, hit a guy. But I was impressed with his ability to throw strikes and get outs. And Eric Walker is now a serious outlier on this staff where everybody seemingly is throwing it 92 to 96. He's down there at 87, but he's just as effective as a lot of those guys at 86, 87. I thought it was encouraging to see him get back out there on Friday.
All right, one more guy, Hunt, that isn't in the starting weekend rotation, but was for most of last year, Mikhail Hilliard. The news today, Paul Maneri announced that he's out this weekend, recently underwent non-invasive procedure, and he could be back as early as next week. But are you at all having to, I guess, reassess what might be possible for him this year?
I always am with pitchers. When injuries linger, you just kind of have to wonder if it's going to get better. I was glad to hear that he went through a procedure because I'm always for, well, I feel more confident in a return to form with someone who's had a doctor fix it as opposed to, well, it just doesn't feel right, we'll see next week. Those don't tend to end very well. When a doctor fixes it, it tends to end a little bit better. So, no, I don't want anybody to go out there and have surgery all the time. Like, I'm not pulling for people to have surgery. But I guess I should say my confidence in relying on somebody to help the team goes up once the injury is fixed. And so hopefully they've found and identified what's given Mikhail Hilliard a little bit of trouble, because I didn't think he looked too bad 2 weeks ago when I saw him throw. I thought the curveball was pretty good, and he got the fastball up to 87, and I thought it looked okay. And he has a spot in this bullpen for sure if he can return to the form that he had last year. But that remains to be seen, so we just sit and wait and hope, and I hope he can come back in and help.
Hunt Palmer showing us some love in our 4 o'clock hour each and every Thursday. He's a great follow on Twitter. If you haven't done so, get there, at HuntPalmer88. All right, now let's get to that weekend rotation. I think a lot of people expected big things out of Landon Marceau. All right, so check through one weekend. As far as Jaden Hill is concerned, should we have expected this, or are there some things that you saw with the 8 strikeout performance that even maybe turned your head somewhat?
Just the pitchability was better than I've seen him since I saw him in the fall. I've probably seen him pitch 7 times, and that was probably the best I've seen him. Maybe the week before in the scrimmage, he was just about like that. But when he got to LSU, he had a really strong arm. He could throw a changeup, and the breaking ball was so-so. And the breaking ball now is sharp, and it's breaking off the table. And the fastball, he commanded it to both sides of the plate in the game on Sunday and was getting punch-outs with 2 strikes, 95 on the outside corner. I mean, that's pitching, and he was fantastic. And that was pleasantly surprising to me. I knew he could throw it hard, and I knew he could probably get some guys from lesser teams out, but to dominate like that, the stuff he was throwing on Sunday would get SEC teams out. Maybe not 8 strikeouts and a shutout ball into the 6 or whatever it was that he did, but he would get some outs with that kind of stuff against the SEC, so that was encouraging, yeah.
Anything else that struck you when it comes to the lineup at the plate and knowing that Bryant's coming to town and we don't know a ton about them, but they are going to start 2 lefty pitchers? Anything you would say outside of Beloso at the dish and knowing they're facing lefties?
Well, I mean, it's a good lineup, and it's just a different group with Josh Smith up there. He's just the ringleader. He's a catalyst. He's going to be an all-conference player. He might be an all-American player. I mean, he got 8 hits over the weekend, got a couple more on Tuesday. He's just such a good hitter and such a good player, and you see how much they missed him last year. And so I think he's an awesome catalyst at the top of the lineup, and I expect more of that for the rest of the season. And the top 6 in this lineup is really scary. When you look at Smith, and then you go to Bruce Ardu, who did a nice job kind of filling in his place. He's going to get a ton of fastballs because you're sitting there in front of Duplantis, who, oh, by the way, drove in 10 runs. And you got Cabrera and Watson. And if Garza can lay off breaking balls, which he did a little bit on Saturday and Sunday, and swing at fastballs, he's going to hit a lot of balls really hard. He did on Sunday. And so LSU's good, but you know, it's an evolution from start to finish. It's just week 2.
All right, before we let you go, we got to ask at least one LSU basketball-related question. I'm encouraging our listeners not to go into Chicken Little mode. LSU basketball is 11-2 in SEC play. That's freaking unheard of in the last decade plus. But anything last night for you that could be symptomatic, or I guess emblematic, symptomatic, the word I just fused together, of bigger problems down the road?
I don't know if a lot of teams can copy Florida's defense against ball screens and Waters. They just pushed him so far off the ball screen and didn't let him turn the corner, and it stunted LSU's offense. And I thought the answer to that was going to be to throw it to the post, where Florida was undersized, and LSU just kind of refused to do that. They insisted on driving and keeping the ball in Tremont's hands. If they can, it really, you know, hamstrings LSU's offense. We'll see. But, you know, look, Florida has been terrible in offense all year. Kevon Allen's been shooting 19% over the last 6 games for 3-point range. He went nuts. And Florida shot it great from 3. LSU missed 3 uncontested layups, shot 64% from the free throw line, and still had a shot in the air to win the game. I'm not gonna panic. LSU did not play well last night, but that happens when you play 18 conference games. You just don't have it every night, and they didn't. So you're still in first place. Well, right there next to have a chance to take first place in the league on Saturday. And you just got to go out there and prepare for that one and put this one behind you.
First Outside the Box podcast came out 3 days ago, 1045ESPN.com. You, Charlie Hanegriff, was it just like riding a bike again?
Year 3. What a run for Hunt and Henny. Not too difficult for the two of us to sit around and talk LSU baseball for 20 minutes. We can make that work every Monday.
Hunt, you're the best. We appreciate you doing this on a Thursday. Find that Bud Light soon. Enjoy your weekend.
Sure will, Ben. Thanks.
Hunt Palmer, great podcasting, basketball as well as baseball. covering LSU. He doesn't do it for football because, well, he's got other responsibilities as the host of the pregame, postgame shows for the LSU Sports Radio Network. Final break in the hour. When we return, don't be shy on me. We need to talk LSU basketball. We need to talk Zion Williamson. Get in while you can. Jeff Horchek, 5 until 5:30. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, holding court, having fun at the Tap Room River Ranch on 103.7 The Game.
This show won't protect your quarterback or cover downfield,
but it's got animal control down pat.
Oh, if you see a possum, try to kill it, okay? It's not a pet.
Back to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Knowing what I know now, college is bull. College basketball, NCAA is bull. So my advice to him is do what's best for you and your family. And obviously, college is. You can't really, it does nothing for you at this point. You're proving you're the number one pick coming out. You're proving your talent. Get ready for the next level. It's happening.
Thank you, Boogie Cousins, for that. We'll dive into that topic. And we've got some breaking news on Cajun's football scheduling. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game. Having a great time at the Tap Room River Ranch. Don't forget, we're done at 7, but the fun continues into the night. Live music, Corey Lynn Landry, 8 until 11, no cover charge. And again, no rhythms on the river in the area, no problem. Just come out to the Tap Room River Ranch, get your fix, have a great time, start the weekend early. How about that Cajuns football news? I'm going to spin the wheel and go there first, and then we'll get back to the sage wisdom spoken, from former Kentucky Wildcat DeMarcus Boogie Cousins. Just announced about 12 minutes ago, the Cajuns and Texas Longhorns football have scheduled a matchup for early in the 2021 football season. And, of course, it'll be in Austin, Darrell K. Royal, Texas Memorial Stadium. It will be the first game of the season, Saturday, September 4. Again, it's 2021, so not this season, not the next, the one after that. UL will start the season at Texas. Danny Jones, congrats on the negotiations. You got this one home, brother. Dr. Brian Maggard saying, we're very excited for the opportunity to compete with the University of Texas. This is a regional matchup that will provide great exposure for our football program in the state of Texas while also allowing Cajun Nation to attend a non-conference game against a Big 12 conference opponent. This is cool. Mississippi State in the Superdome to start this coming 2019 season is cool. Cajuns football is starting to give fans a reason to go to the away games. I know that you're feeling the other shoe and it's about to drop. We all know that the elephant in the room is great. Can we get them to attend the home games now with regularity? Yes, that is certainly the more glaring issue. I think winning will take care of that. That'll be up to Napier and company. But all you can control in the front office in situations like this, once you put the right people in place, and I would argue that the Cajuns have one of the best group of five football staffs that I've ever heard of. I mean, seriously, when you think about some of the talent they've got right now as assistants and coordinators, it's not usually what you get at this level. But the front office, which is to say the athletic administration, can only really take care now of stuff like scheduling, of stuff like in-game entertainment, the atmosphere, the tailgating, so forth, and so on. Getting more night games as opposed to day games and Tuesday, Thursday games. Well, they took care of that last year as well. But this I like a lot. I don't have any doubt Cajun fans will go to Austin. LSU fans are going to do it here in like 6 months. I don't have any doubt Cajun fans are going to go to watch UL and Mississippi State. And if you're Billy Napier, who, by the way, I think he's doing a hell of a job, but if you're Billy, you might want to earmuff it when I say this. You could lose those two games by a combined 80 points. Who cares? I hate to say it that way, but those are destination trips. Now, are they going to lose those games by a combined 80 points? Probably not. I would think not. As somebody who knows probably just a little, and only a little, about college football. Don't want to sell myself short, but I don't know what they know, obviously. I just think being in those atmospheres, getting your fans to those games, to me, is the most important part of it. If you get there and compete, what do we say on the show all the time? It's line, yeah. It's playing with house money. But being in that arena, hey, that's a big deal. And some pretty cool stuff that just came out right after 4:30. I wanted to make sure I shared it with you. You're welcome to weigh in. LSU basketball, UL football, the scheduling, little LSU baseball. We just took a twirl with Hunt Palmer on that front. Whatever tickles your fancy. 706-0111. Now, I did also lead this segment off, really and truly, Clint did, with some Boogie Cousins sound. And he said, in no uncertain terms, first he said that college is bull bleep. Then he said that college basketball is bull bleep. And, you know, maybe he's a little bit like Cardale Jones, who left Ohio State. I didn't come to Ohio State to go to college. I didn't come here to play college. I came here to play football. Well, DeMarcus was forced to play basketball at Kentucky for a year. I feel quite certain he didn't play a lot of college under Calipari. That's just going to be a suspicion of mine. Probably wasn't the primary focus for he and John Wall that one year in Lexington. But to use, again, I'm going to repeat this, to use the Zion Williamson injury last night, which, by the way, is a knee sprain not thought to be severe. I'm happy for the kid about that. To use that as your jump-off point to crush the NCAA is just as dumb as it comes to me. You're going to say he shouldn't have been playing at this level. He risked his knees for college basketball, for the NCAA. He risked it for them. It's their fault. No, it's not. It's more Nike's fault, isn't it? It's more the kid's fault for wearing a shooting guard shoe that is meant for guards. I'd say that's a little more of his fault. If you get into an elevator and it says max capacity of, I don't even know what it is these days. Let's say it's 1,500 pounds. Well, look, man, if you put 2,750 pounds in that elevator and it takes a tumble on you, are you going to blame the suit up at the top of that building who heads a banking company? No. You put too much into that elevator. Zion Williamson put too much body into those shoes. If you don't like that explanation, I'd be happy for you to call me and tell me just why. But for me, it's a little insincere. And the body count of NBA players who are using this as their rallying cry is hilarious to me. That's why I would never want to be a part of collective bargaining agreements. Thank God that they send people like Chris Paul, somebody with a couple of active brain cells rattling around, to represent the players, that they used to send people like Kevin Mawai, a former LSU football player, many active brain cells rattling around, to go deal with DeMaurice Smith and the NFL brass when they have these collective bargaining agreement meetings and summits. Because if Joe Blow and the NBA got to speak for everybody, help us all, man. Because right now, that body count that I referred to includes, that I've seen at least, Trae Young. It includes DeMarcus Cousins, who we just heard from. It includes Donovan Mitchell, who could have been the rookie of the year last year for the Utah Jazz. A lot of these recent one-and-done college players are lamenting the fact they had to go at all. Last night in Durham is not the jump-off point for you to be able to say that, in my opinion. Now, what was funny, and we'll talk about this more in the 5 o'clock hour, I love Luka Doncic, who probably will be this year's rookie of the year. I love the Dallas Mavs rookie saying, hey, you could have played in NBA Europe, or not NBA, you could have played in Europe, you could have played overseas. Maybe yes, maybe no. Zion Williamson coming out of high school wasn't a slam dunk, going to be the number one overall pick. Kid put on a bunch of weight, got to Duke, refined his skills, and played for the best college team in America. That helped him to become a slam dunk number one overall pick. So the idea that you were going to go right out of high school and make $2.5 million, which is the number that's been thrown around to go play for like Real Madrid, boy, I'm not sure that that was definitely on the table. And my man Evan Daniels for 247 Sports said exactly that. What he would be worth in Europe now after more than two-thirds of a season at Duke isn't what he would have been worth if he had just come out of high school and said, all right, how much can I fetch over the pond, overseas? So a lot of interesting talking points and a lot of people that are talking, hate to say this, LSU fans, because you're not allowed to sing this in Tiger Stadium. You got people that are talking out the side of their neck. It's the only way I know how to put it. All right, CD, let's get to one final word.
What's up, Katie Anna? I'm Gabe Broussard from Strange Theories and Season 11 of The Boys. It's almost 5 o'clock. Now it's time for the final word of the hour, and it's presented to you by me and my family at the Village Station. We are your final stop to fill up your stomach and your tank when you're heading home on Maurice Avenue. Now, here's Ben. His voice is pretty nice, but I don't think he could ever make two chairs turn.
Two words, step up. And I'll go back to that Raging Cajun scheduling on the football side I mentioned. Not a lot you could do about what happens in conference. Same thing that befalls UL basketball and baseball. They can't help their RPI in conference all that much. They got to go schedule big out of conference. This is big for RPI purposes. Cajun's going to Texas in 2 years. I think it's even bigger for the appeal to the fan base. So I applaud Dr. Brian Maggard, Billy Napier and company. Way to step up. Those are the final words of this hour, and they're brought to you by the Village Station, your final stop to fill the stomach and tank as you head home on Maurice Avenue. One-third of the way home, this is Bumper to Bumper Sports. Jeff Horchek next from the Taproom River Ranch on 103.7 The Game.
Live from the 2-3...
We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
So who do I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah!
And now let's get started.
We are off and running. Hour two of listening to Bumper Sports on 1037 The Game. Ben Love live from the Taproom River Ranch, the famous CD, inside the 237 Roof Studios. No job too big, too small. Just call Lafayette Roofing, 237-7663. Our man Jeff Horchek, not here just yet. That's okay. I've got a feeling he'll be here shortly. He's also told me that he planned today to bring his dog Trooper, and maybe once and for all we'll figure out if the dog is better on radio or TV. Like his owner, a versatile pup. Or so I'm told. But right now, while Jeff is out, we've got some time for your phone calls, 706-0111. And don't forget, we've also got Brad Boyd scheduled to hop on the show. He'll be here live at the Tap Room, 6 to 6:30. Full breakdown of prep basketball brackets on the boys' side, select and non-select. Some of your news of the day, LSU basketball falling in overtime at home to Florida. It's only the second loss in the last 16 outings for Will Wade and the Tigers. Credit needs to go to Florida. Kevon Allen got hot late, 12 of his 21 points in overtime, and he was able to help Florida overcome one of Naz Reid's most active performances, 16 and 15. Waters not flowing for LSU last night. Shot 25% from the field, ends up with only 10 points, and they relied on the three ball a little too often and a little too late, particularly with Waters and with Javonte Smart. So my takeaways there, and I'll make it brief. Florida's pace, as you just heard Will Wade say during the two-minute drill, was what ruled the night. They got to slow it down. They got to muck it up. They got to play half court. And the Gators' defense, once they get there, it's for real. They entered last night second in the league in scoring defense, and I can't imagine that that got any worse. I'd also say that occasional overdependence on Trey Waters can be costly. LSU is seeing that. It could result in an early exit from March Madness, but I'm not ready to predict that it will. That said, I appreciate the heck out of what Will Wade said after the ball game last night. That LSU hoops, when the season ends, it's going to end just like it did against Florida. Against a team like that, and LSU's got a few weeks to try and figure out how to pickle a beast of that nature. How to get over on a team that forces them to slow down. And in those instances, if Waters can't pull a rabbit out of his hat or a three-pointer out of his you-know-what, and they may be in a little bit of trouble. And so for me, I think that you need to caution yourself a little bit if last night was that much of a panic button incident for you. As I mentioned, there were six games last night that involved ranked teams. Take LSU out of it. There were six other games. Four of them lost. Now, I know that Duke, UNC, somebody had to lose. But Villanova, Louisville, Nevada, all lost last night. Some at home, some on the road. It's college basketball. It happens. Team that wins the Natty Ship is probably going to have five, six, maybe seven losses on the record. It happens. It's okay. Like Aaron Rodgers says, you're going to need to relax just a little bit. Some other news that we learned on the LSU baseball side of things. Mikhail Hilliard, according to head coach Paul Mainieri, out this weekend. He might be back early next week, but it's not for certain. Hilliard had non-invasive, I wouldn't call it a surgery, he had a non-invasive procedure done, and so suddenly he's getting pushed down the line a little bit in terms of guys that might have a chance to start games, I don't think just on the weekends, but even as that midweek starter. Mainieri also confirmed that Cade Beloso, hero last Saturday at the box, the freshman will be the starter Friday night at first base. Last weekend for the opening series, it was Drew Bianco, first crack at first base. This weekend against Bryant, it'll be Cade Beloso. And the rotation will stay the same. LSU's going to go with Hess on Friday night, Marceau on Saturday, Jaden Hill, reigning SEC Freshman of the Week, on Sunday. And something that I'm just now catching up to, it's good reporting here, James Moran, Tiger Rag Magazine. Don't forget, he'll be with us tomorrow at 5 o'clock. James got a chance to catch up with Zach Hess, media availability in Baton Rouge earlier this afternoon. Hess seems to think that he found and corrected, in his words, a small mechanical issue during his side work over the course of this week. Most notably, Hess says that he wasn't leg kicking as high as he had all summer long when he was fantastic for Team USA and everybody else that he suited it up for. So LSU baseball getting ready for a fairly nondescript opponent, Bryant, but an opportunity to solidify at least the early non-conference weekend rotation. It'll be Hess, it'll be Marceau, it'll be Hill. On the other side, Bryant is going to throw a righty, followed by two lefties on Saturday and Sunday. And we also reported news, came down midway through the 4 o'clock hour, the Raging Cajuns are going to start the 2021 football season. It'll be a Saturday, September the 4th, in Austin. UL playing the Texas Longhorns. I think that's pretty cool stuff. Now, I gave you that in the 4 o'clock hour, but we can chase it with this news because, well, it just came down the pike as well, and I'm catching up to it. According to Barton Simmons of 247 Sports, a guy who certainly knows his stuff, former Alabama linebacker, a five-year NFL linebacker, Nico Johnson, is joining Billy Napier's staff here in Cajun Country as a defensive quality control assistant. That's how you build it. And if anybody would know, it's somebody who has been on Nick Saban's staff. And so now with this news today, he's going to bring on one of Nick Saban's former star players, a guy that certainly Napier got to watch up close and personal as an assistant on those staffs in Tuscaloosa. And so just another SEC NFL veteran that's coming over to UL staff. You'll recall that Zach Etheridge, who played at Auburn, was the Cajuns' DB coach last year. Now, he's moved over to the University of Houston, but pretty cool stuff. Nico Johnson going to be a defensive quality control assistant for Raging Cajuns football. All right, we're going to do our best to take a break, and hopefully I'll be joined by Jeff Horchek on the other side. Checking the old cell phone, no message yet. So we're expecting not only Jeff, our good friend from KLFY, he's been with us Thursdays in the 5 o'clock hour lately, but his dog Trooper. We'll see if we can bark up the right tree and get him back when we return. We're hanging out at the Tap Room River Ranch. I'll be here on the air until 7. Great part. After that, I get to stick around and stop working. I get to enjoy the live music just like you do. So come and join us. Start your weekend early. Corey Lynn Landry, he's a big fan of this show, and even more than that, our station. So I got to show him love as well. Corey Lynn Landry, laying down the sound. No cover charge, 8 until 11 o'clock tonight. Come out and see him if you can at the Tap Room River Ranch. Bumper to Bumper Sports, we'll be right back in on 103.7 The Game.
going back to our regular show, all right?
This is Acadiana's number one sports station. And you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game. Live online at 103.7thegame.com. Follow on Facebook and Twitter now at 103.7 The Game.
Yeah, I thought they beat us to a lot of 50-50 balls. I thought they were more physical. We told our guys, you know, told our guys all week that Florida was going to give us unbelievable resistance defensively, and I don't think some of our guys believed us. I think some of our guys just thought we were just going to be able to kind of show up and do what we do. And, you know, that wasn't the case.
Will Wade, after LSU's 82-77 OT loss to Florida, Gators a more physical team, according to Wade there. Well, that's the time for your phone calls in this segment. Bumper to Bumper Sports, right back to the Tap Room River Ranch on 103.7 The Game. No go today, it seems, for our friend Jeff Horchek, KLFY. That's all right. He's been great to us. Hopefully we'll be able to run it back next Thursday. But it means that we'll talk some LSU hoops in this segment. It means that we'll take your phone calls in this segment, 706-0111. Also means you'll get to hear a little bit more from Will Wade. Just what were his thoughts on the loss? I'm sure that you could take away his big picture thoughts, right? And I still love the quote, and I'll give you the meat and potatoes of it. Wade, after last night, there's a certain type of team that gives us a lot of problems, and whenever our season ends, wherever that is, it's going to end just like this. That's like the realest thing that there could be, in my opinion, because he's not only right about the type of team that gives LSU issues. But that, I think, is the perfect way to show your team its mortality. Because he did go on to follow that up with, we've got several weeks to figure out how to beat this type of team. And again, he's absolutely right. Now, let's be clear on one thing. Tennessee, coming in this weekend, isn't that type of team. Frankly, they're a little bit more like LSU. They like to score. They like to run. Rick Barnes' team, probably the biggest difference between the Vols and the Tigers is just experience. I would say LSU might even be a touch more athletic, but I think Tennessee is slightly deeper in its rotation, and they're more experienced, not just with personnel, but you could say with head coach too, right? We don't have to shy away from that. Will Wade is basically my age. I marvel all the time at some of the things he's able to accomplish that fresh and new into the game. Rick Barnes has been doing this for quite some time. Rick Barnes was posted 20-win seasons when me and Will Wade were, you know, teenage. So it's just, you got to call it like it is. It'll be a tough test, but I think it'll be one where LSU will have more than a puncher's chance to get a win against the top five team. So a big opportunity that's coming up this weekend, but you had one that was squandered a bit against Florida. Here's more from Wade on last night's ball game. For him, offensive rebounds for Florida, something we didn't predict before the game, killed the Tigers in the second half.
I thought they really hurt us on the offensive glass in the second half. That was something that came back to bite us. So, we didn't finish well enough at the rim. We didn't shoot free throws like we normally shoot free throws. We missed in front of us in one-on-ones and just weren't very crisp tonight. Weren't as crisp as we needed to be with our execution and things like that.
We'll get another take here from Will Wade, second-year head coach at LSU. And the Tigers with only their second loss in conference play. So still so much that's on the horizon. But he goes a little deeper on the loss to Florida last night.
Well, we could just never get in rhythm tonight. The game was played at Florida's pace and their way the whole night. We could never get ourselves going, and you know, Florida was able to impose their will, impose their style of play on us. Allen was phenomenal for them, obviously hit some big shots in the second half and overtime.
And the next point that he'll make, I think, is a pretty important one, because LSU, I mean, they've been the leave it late, cardiac cats type team. Boy, I don't know. I mean, ever since maybe week two or three of SEC play, I mean, there's been a string of games with very few exceptions in between where LSU has, I mean, just left its most important basketball for late. almost NBA style. They'll tune in until the final 2 to 4 minutes. With the Tigers this year, LSU fans would probably have less heart palpitations if they followed that mantra. Because you watch LSU in the first half of so many of these games, and to me, the one that jumps to mind is Auburn and Bruce Pearl in Baton Rouge a couple Saturdays ago. And they fall down 16 points? Are you kidding me? Down 10 or 12 in the second half? As Jordy Holtberg said earlier, I caught this on my drive to the tap room. I agree with him. Why LSU basketball feels the need to be punched in the mouth first and then they react. It's a tough way to make a living once you get to the big dance. But they've been so good at that tight wire, high rope act, as Will Wade has called it in the past. They've been very good at it, in fact. Three overtime wins on the road in SEC play alone. I mean, that kind of stuff is unheard of. The fact that they did what they accomplished in Rupp Arena, and that almost literally is unheard of. Only 6 wins all time for LSU at Rupp. And then they've had a number of close calls at home. Well, the Arkansas game at home didn't go LSU's way, and last night against Florida did not either. And here Wade tells you we weren't able, for once, to execute late.
I mean, at the end, we didn't execute the last when we had got the ball with 5.7 seconds left. We didn't do what we were supposed to do. We didn't execute there. And then in overtime, I mean, they just hit some really tough shots. And then, you know, we gave ourselves a chance. We just couldn't capitalize. But we didn't make our free throws enough. I didn't think, we were solid enough on defense either.
We got a few more from Wade, but if you want to weigh in on LSU hoops, hey, we've had a segment vacated here. We've got some space, a little real estate I didn't think we'd have today. That's okay. You can help us to fill it up. 706-0111. The next cut from Wade, it's all about Trey Waters. And aside from pace, which was obviously in Florida's favor, this was the maybe second biggest point in the ball game that really got away from LSU. Unlike so many people that, whether they mean to or not, allow Waters to take the game to them and allow him to become a menace inside the paint, Florida didn't allow that at all last night. They were so good at helping to take him out of his comfort zone, force him to be a bomb squad, step back three guy, and while he's got that in his bag, it's not where LSU is best if he's doing that. So here, Wade tells you, Florida made Waters play in ways that he hadn't been used to in the last few weeks.
Now, they took him away tonight. They did a great job. They did a great job taking him away. Their point guard played, Nembhard played very, very well.
Shorter than I thought it was going to be, but he's right. And we talked before the ball game about Florida's point guard, who I think was more effective in the win at Alabama over the weekend. He was more effective offensively playing at the Tide, but in that game last night, I would have to side with Will Wade defensively. Yeah. The kid was dynamite for the Florida Gators. All right, we've got time for one more from LSU coach Will Wade, and this is what I continue to come back to. Pace. Don't look at the final score and allow that to give you some kind of impression that this is a high-scoring game. Yeah, LSU got the 77, and they did it with a number of points in overtime. This one, with the Tigers selling for far too many threes, not having a cohesive half-court offense with Waters having to distribute from outside instead of inside the three-point line. This one was played at Florida's pace.
It's tough. We changed our defenses a little bit, but the pace you've got to create with them is not defense. You've got to create pace on offense with your offense. You've got to get the ball up the court quicker. We sat there against the 1-2-2 a couple times. We didn't get into the ball. We didn't create any pace with our offense. It's hard to create pace with your defense against them because they're such a good shooting team and that sort of thing. You've got to create pace with your offense, and we weren't able to do that.
All right, so a good bit of looking back at LSU's loss to Florida. We'll look forward for the rest of this segment and for a portion of our 5 o'clock hour here to what's coming this weekend. Tennessee, number 5 team in the country for the better part of a month, the number 1 team in the country. And with Admiral Schofield, some of the, I guess, increasingly household name players, we can call them, at Tennessee, I think that very quickly they've been respected as maybe the most complete team, the most experienced team, certainly, of the three front runners in the league this year. Out of LSU, Kentucky, and Tennessee, there's no question which one has been there, done that before. With LSU, it's about playing at somebody else's pace, winning at somebody else's pace when forced to. I think that's their really – I honestly believe that's the biggest and I won't say the only issue, but certainly the biggest one that faces Will Wade's team down the stretch of the season. If they can win in close quarters in March, there's really no ceiling on what this LSU team can accomplish, provided they stay healthy. With Kentucky, they've got some slightly different issues to LSU because, look, they've got one of the best players in the league in P.J. Washington. There's no question about that. But they're very dependent on, what is it, Reed Travis, the kid that transferred over from the Pac-12? They're very dependent on him playing big, and I mean that quite, you know, literally, not just figuratively, in the paint. They need a rim protector. They have kids that sometimes are shaky. And so their issues aren't exactly LSU's issues. Cavell Bigby-Williams is more consistent than Reed Travis is right now in terms of defensive presence. That said, Kentucky's probably got a little better overall team defense in the half court. Kentucky's got some guys that can shoot it from outside where LSU might be a little streakier. So there are subtle differences in LSU and Kentucky. But the most complete team of the bunch, without question, is Tennessee. And what's fun is that these three, they don't quite play round robin again before the end of the SEC slate, but there's going to be a lot of those teams playing one another. I mean, you're still going to see LSU play Tennessee. Hey, that's this weekend in Baton Rouge. You're still going to see Tennessee hosting Kentucky, and that'll be a lot of fun over in Rocky Top country. So the top three aren't done duking it out just yet. To me, what's important for LSU, just stay in that top three. You win this weekend, trust me, that is more good than the Florida loss in OT is bad. Florida's starting to play some good basketball. They've won three in a row. They thumped Alabama, probably knocked them off the bubble for now. They beat LSU in Baton Rouge. And, oh, by the way, the three games that this Florida team lost, the three games that Florida lost before their three-game winning streak, all single-digit close ball games, Kentucky, Auburn, and Tennessee. All right, we'll take a call quickly to the Artco Equipment Hotline. Ron, the floor is yours.
How you doing, Ben? Yeah, just a question for you. The way Florida played LSU last night with taking Waters out, I'm assuming that we're going to see a lot more of that, you know, longer we go in the season, you know, take Waters out and let's see what LSU has. But I want to make a comment and he answer on this. You think, and I've been trying to get my finger on this LSU team, you think this is a good basketball team with good basketball players or good basketball team with athletes that's you know, that's playing basketball? Because I think our IQ and our basketball savvy going to get tested, you know, later we go with this thing. Huh? Just would like to hear your comments on that.
I completely agree with that. So, Ron, here's what I'll do. I'll give you some surface reaction, and then I'll go a little deeper on the other side of this break. Yes, the basketball IQ isn't where it needs to be, and some of that is youth, but they're still teaching these kids. They're still learning to play together. It's the reality of major college basketball. You don't have long to do that. I do think that there are some savvy basketball players, and I think they're more than just great athletes. I'll touch more on that when we return. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, hanging out, having a great time at the Tap Room River Ranch on 103.7 The Game.
You say tomato, I say tomato. The famous Clint D says something none of us will agree with. Back to more top shelf analysis for your drive home. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
I swear the fallout from the Zion Williamson injury, not the injury itself, I never wish anybody harm, but the fallout really is funny, like six ways from Sunday. I'll keep giving you some reasons why as we return. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, live from the Tap Room River Ranch on 103.7 The Game. How about your daily reminder? It's really a PSA locally that no one throws shade outside your home or business like the pros at Patio Center. Go to the website, patiocenter.com. Check out the retractable shades and screens, the standing seam metal awnings, and the customized patio covers with the cypress accents. And know that you can trust their professional installers inside your home to beautify life outside your home. Alex will be the one to put up the shades and awnings, while Todd mans the installation of your patio covers and those gorgeous customizable screen rooms. Collectively, they're ready to up your patio game in 2019, and they can do it before the kickoff of this coming football season. But you need to act quickly. You need to go now to patiocenter.com. Kings.com. The Kings of customization. It's never one size fits all for the licensed, insured, and bonded professionals at Patio Center.
It's time for Throwing Shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. Nobody throws shade outside your home or business like Patio Center. Visit the website at patiocenter.com.
First and foremost, if you're trying to capitalize off a youngster getting injured to prop up your brand, you might be a little stupid. And I think Puma Basketball needs to own that after what they did last night. 9:27 p.m., and I do believe that's Eastern time. So this probably literally happened within, 10 to 12 minutes of Zion Williamson's injury. UNC at Duke is, of course, what we're talking about. Kids wearing Nike shoes. At Puma Hoops, yeah, the official verified Twitter account, gave us the following right after the injury. Wouldn't have happened in the Pumas. Oh, you can't do that. And then even worse than that, CD, they deleted the tweet. I have never deleted a tweet in my life. Now, I'm going to have to walk that back. If I've ever, I did this maybe one or two times since the show began. I'll walk that back ever so briefly. I've used the wrong Twitter handle. Like Greg Heyer, for example, an LSU basketball assistant came on with this. He's got two Twitter handles. One is outdated. I just used the wrong one. So I literally would delete it and then resubmit it back out there just with the corrected Twitter handle and the same information. If you say something so stupid that you have to correct it, especially when you are an organization, a multi-million dollar organization like Puma, wow, I got to throw a shade at Puma for that. And then to have the, you know what, to say that right after a kid, an 18, 19-year-old kid got injured, wouldn't have happened in the Pumas. You people are idiots. Sorry, I got a few more that are kind of related to this whole subject. And Clint, I had a really good time with this. Carlos Boozer, former all-time Dukie, great. He's on Twitter at Mr. C. Booz, B-O-O-Z. I got to think this was unintentional. I'll let you weigh in on this. The tweet from Carlos right after it happened, get well soon at Zion NPS. Do you know what that stands for, Clint? Do you know whose Twitter account that is, which he mistook for Zion Williamson?
All right, I'm far from an expert on this, but is that not a national park?
Ding, ding, ding. Zion National Park Service. Clearly it's a mistake by Booze, but this is just all-time great heads-up play by the social media manager of that National Park Service. They responded immediately, Clint. Thanks. In anticipation of heavy snow, several roads at Zion National Park have closed. Be careful out there. Visit for updates. You know that's good.
Oh, it's phenomenal, Ben. It is just amazing to hear that one.
The fallout just continues to slay me. But again, you're just joining the show. I've thrown shade basically the entire show at anybody 6'8", 285 that's trying to wear a tennis shoe that is made for a guard. And it is the PG 2.5. It's the signature shoe, at least the latest iteration from Paul George of the Oklahoma City Thunder. The shoe is explicitly made for guards. This human being weighs 285 pounds, sort of. If we're telling the truth, it's probably more than that. The other little bit that I'll put out there. Now, I know from what I've read so far, look, I'm not the guy that's managing your money, but from what I've read so far, the market in general wasn't a great place to be, right? That being said, Nike took a bit of a tumble as well. As of noon Eastern time, I'm reading this report here from the New York Times. That's pretty reliable. Nike stock dropped 2% pre-market and was down more than 1% as of noon Eastern time. Nike is quote-unquote concerned and investigating the quote-unquote issue. Considering that Nike is a $130 billion market cap corporation, that would mean north of $1.3 billion. Now, I know that the market fluctuates. Maybe it was because of Zion, maybe it wasn't. But as we say about the Saints in the NFC title game, with refs from Southern California for crying out loud, the optics, CD, they just ain't good.
We're done throwing shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. For now, you want your life made in the shade? Visit PatioCenter.com and explore ways to improve life outside your home or business.
Again, nothing funny. About 18, 19-year-old amateur athlete picking up a grade one knee sprain. Nothing funny about it at all. But some of the fallout, oh, it deserves being bashed like a pinata. Some of the morons that are spouting off in the midst of it deserve to be crushed. And thankfully, our good friends at Patio Center, they do more than just throw shade outside your home or business. They give me this platform every single day. All right, let's take our final break of the hour. When we return, somebody over there in the Cajuns Athletic Administration office is just doing work on the scheduling front. I gave you Texas earlier in the show. They announced another one from a Power 5 conference in 2023. I'll share that with you when we return, and I'll do a deeper dive on Ron's question about LSU basketball. You're listening to Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we're coming right back to a hoppin' Taproom River Ranch on 103.7 The Game.
Let's go! Let's go, baby!
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
And you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
Live online at 103.7thegame.com.
Get in on the conversation.
Call on the game hotline.
706-0111.
706-0111.
Get loud. Right back in. One more time during the 5 o'clock hour. You're listening to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game. Ben Love joining you from the Taproom River Ranch, my partner in crime, the famous Clint D from the 237 Roof Studios. No job too big, too small. Just call Lafayette Roofing, 237-7663. And the man is in the building. I'm going to call him the head shark. I don't know if that flies. We'll find out soon. But Brad Boyd is here. He'll be with us from 6 until 6:30. Between now and then, Ron asked a really good question right before 5:30, and now I've got some more space. So I'm going to go in there. You can take your phone calls as well. 706-0111. Is LSU basketball more a collection of great athletes this year, or do they have really good, if not great, basketball players? And I think it varies a little bit. I think we could be honest with ourselves. The kids that come from the JUCO ranks, there's reason that happens. I mean, it could be behavioral, right? Could be grades-based. But a lot of times, they haven't refined their game as well either. And I think that's a fair assessment that I could make of Marlon Taylor, for example. Now, what he's brought to this team defensively is important when he stays with it and he's consistent. But I think there are players on the team, and Marlon might be a good example. I think at times, an example of guys that are probably playing like more of athletes than they are basketball players on the floor. Again, I don't want to over-dissect Will Wade's team because he's got these guys, by and large, functioning very well in their role. They've won 14 of 16 games. Let's not kid ourselves. They lost one last night. It's basketball. It happens. If you're treating that differently, you've got a football mentality. This ain't football. But I do think you've got kids like Naz Reid, who, while I know many of you want him to play down in the post with his size, that's not his game. I think Naz Reid's got some decent basketball IQ. I think Trey Waters, who got crushed last night on social media and today on social media for his lack of basketball IQ, I think that's probably a little unfair because that's the same kid that we were all praising at the very end of the Kentucky game because he was able to draw what many consider a gamesmanship type of foul. As I remember, Kentucky misses a free throw. Waters comes down with it, pulls a vet NBA type of move, and draws two free throws when LSU needed some bonus points, and they needed them with the clock stopped. So again, that knife can cut both ways. I try to be careful there, and I would advise you do the same. But I know what Ron's question is. IQ cost them a game or priced them out of a game potentially in March Madness? And the answer is quite possibly. But you got to consider what might be on the other side. And I'll give you an example. The ultimate meat grinder of a team that's out there in the NC2A ranks today and probably for the last 8 to 10 years is Virginia. Virginia loses games against teams that it's better than in March because it does rely on a style where it slows you down. It's a meat grinder, as I said, and they're not going to allow you to run and gun. Well, Virginia is like Florida, Georgia, teams that have given LSU problems with their style. Virginia's like the Gators and the Bulldogs on steroids. And so that type of, yeah, they have probably more talent than LSU in some ways, but their basketball IQ is better. So the answer to Ron's question is if they meet that type of team, then yes, it could be their demise in March. But I'm going to revert back to what Will Wade said. He said our season will end against a team like this unless, and I'm paraphrasing, we do something about it over the next couple weeks. Got to give this LSU team credit. They're learning to play together on the fly, and he's absolutely right that they've got a few weeks left to build their collective basketball IQ and chemistry together. They've got a couple of weeks left to learn how to get it done late in the clutch when it's low scoring, when it is half court, and when Trey Waters can't play Superman from three. Set plays initiated by somebody other than Waters. If they can find a way to do that a little more creatively, a little better, they could be an elite team that can go to the Final Four and beyond. If not, then their ceiling might be second or third round, which, again, that hadn't happened around LSU basketball in a long time. Specifically, they haven't gotten past the second round since 2006. So what they're on the brink of doing, even if they did only make it two or three rounds, is fairly historic in this generation. But they've got a chance to be even better than that. I like that Wade's challenging them through the media there. All right, let's get out now to the ARDCO Equipment Hotline. T, thank you for waiting. You know it's great to have you here. What you got for us?
Hey, Ben, no, I'm not going to panic either over that game. I mean, they just got outplayed. But I'm going to agree with your previous call, one of your previous callers that said that, you know, that they're not a team yet. They're still going to roll with this, you know. And they're going to fix this problem, I have a feeling. But let me ask you this. Do you find Trey Waters lost a step with the weight he gained?
That's a tough question. I think he might have tried to bulk up and become a more physical presence. Does that mean he lost a step? I'm not so sure about that. But I'd like to see him think a step ahead or two of the play a little more regularly. So, for me, I don't know if that's an issue, even if he has, to be honest with you. But the vision and seeing ahead of what's happening on the floor, that's the part where he's got to improve the most. And I feel quite certain as a young player that he will.
Hey, I got you, Ben. Hey, love your show, man. Keep it up.
T, you're the best. You know we appreciate it. That got real loud real quick. But CD finally put a muzzle on it. Good. I can hear myself think again. We got time for more calls. 706-0111. I'll also spill the beans on a little tease I had coming out of our last segment. Already today, UL football has announced that it will begin its 2021 season at Texas. Yeah, the Texas Longhorns. That's big time. That is a very manageable, and I would argue, coveted trip. Some 5 hours, maybe, from Lafayette to Austin. I think Cajuns fans are going to absolutely eat that trip alive. So that is cool stuff. I know LSU football will be there week two this year. But Raging Cajuns football is heading to Austin to play the UT Longhorns to start their 2021 season. It's only the third ever meeting between the two schools. So that was given to us in the 4 o'clock hour. They're just knocking it out right now. Over off of Congress Street, up in the Athletic Administration Building, the Cajuns have also announced here in the 5 o'clock hour that they're going to play a September 2023 game at Minnesota. Now, there is a little more history, I think, between these two. Cajuns traveled to play the Golden Gophers during the 2001 and 2003 seasons. It was a 2-for-1. Minnesota came to Cajun Field for the 2002 season. So I believe this will be the fourth ever meeting between the Raging Cajuns and the Golden Gophers. And, yeah, they do play at TCF Bank Stadium now, so it'll be a different locale this time around for UL football. Now, that one's not going to be a season opener. That one's listed as September 30, 2023. So typically that would put it in the range of being week four of the regular season. So, all right, Clint, I've given you the news. You bleed vermilion and white. I know this can't be anything but positive, but give me your thoughts. 1 to 10, how cool are these trips going to be for Cajun fans? I'll let you take them one at a time.
Oh, I've got to take them one at a time. Ben, I think obviously the Texas trip is going to be a perfect 10 right there just because it starts off the season. It's inside Austin, Texas. I mean, it's a pretty notable stadium and notable fan base as well. That's just going to be fun in general with the Texas Longhorn Stadium. Minnesota, though, like I'd probably give that like a 6 or 7. Mind you, thankfully, this is in September before it gets really, really cold. If this was in, like, let's say October, November, then I'd be like, yeah, this is probably a 4 or a 3 for me. But still, like, it's pretty cool they're going to wind up heading up to Minnesota to take on the Golden Gophers. That's awesome, along with, but Texas, I think, is the pinnacle right now.
If I'm not mistaken, I think TCF Bank Stadium is indoor, but I do know what saying as far as the fan experience, right, having to travel up there.
Oh, exactly. I think it's more of a struggle to get over to Minnesota, but Texas, that's just a road trip, and that's going to be pretty fun.
Yeah, that's a short, nice little road trip. So, Cajun fans, congrats on that. Also, for Cajun fans, we got one of your own, former Hooper, Brad Boyd, now the head coach of the Southside High Sharks. They just finished, I believe, their second season on the JV level. They're going to plunge into the varsity ranks next year in District 3-5A. On the other side of this break, we're going to dedicate a half hour live with Coach Boyd, the head shark, as we preview boys basketball playoffs. We got brackets, and soon you're going to have some really entertaining conversations. Do not go anywhere. I'm Ben Love, and you're listening to Bumper Sports. Live from the Taproom River Ranch, it is Hoppin' and Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Thrilled to be a part of it.
We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now,
let's get started.
Out of the tunnel and into hour number three, you're listening to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game. Ben Love, joined momentarily by Coach Brad Boyd. We're live at the Taproom River Ranch. Come see us if you get a chance, but make sure you keep listening to Acadiana Sports Station. Back inside the 237 Roof Studios, powered by Lafayette Roofing, my man, Clint Domingue. But, Coach, welcome in. I know that for you this time of year is bittersweet because you love the playoffs, but your guys, well, they can't enter just yet. You had to finish year two of the JV rank, so a little happy, a little sad.
Definitely, man. I just ran to the bar right there and ran into a good friend, Greg G-Fry, and we were saying the same thing that, you know, just got to kind of sit back and watch it this year. Maybe make some predictions, you know, maybe catch a few games, but next year definitely be in full swing.
A man of your stature always wants to start, but you know as well as I do, playing and coaching, and sometimes we get a chance to sit on the bench and watch the beginning of the game, you learn things. So maybe the Sharks are doing that right now. You're watching what's happening, then you get your chance next year.
Definitely watching and learning some things. I got the luxury of going to the district meeting on Monday for the district I'll be in next year, and every kid that they go over that was first team and second team, I made sure to find out if they were seniors.
There you go.
And half of them were seniors, so it's definitely a good thing for the Sharks. Those good guys that are MVP of the district and first team all district and stuff like that, those guys are going to be getting out of here, and hopefully some of my guys can take over.
We're going to talk some Southside High basketball at the end of this segment, but we got to look over our brackets. Brad Boyd, our guest on 103.7 The Game. I always start on the non-select side, and we go biggest classification down. So I just handed you 5A. Three teams from the area, if we're going to include Barb, that are in it. Take me through Lafayette High. They just squeaked out a home game in this one. So it's 16 hosting 17, Hanville coming to town.
Yeah, definitely, man. It's that 16-17 matchup is always going to be a close game. So if you happen to get the 16 seed, you got an advantage because they got to come play at your gym. Lafayette High is tied co-district champions with LeGrand, 6-1 in that tough district. So I look for them to squeak this one out. And talking with Coach Brown actually on Monday, Thibodeau will probably win the game above them. It'll probably be a Lafayette High-Thibodeau matchup in the second round, which they played Thibodeau already to 4 points.
Yeah.
So they're very confident going into it. They want to handle business. Coach Brown is a game-by-game. You know, he's a great coach, state championship coach. He's going to take this first game, try to get by Hanville, which they should at home. Their point guard is extremely good, a sophomore that we're going to have to battle for the next 2 years at Southside. But I look for them to get past that first round and have a little matchup between them and Thibodeau. You got to go to Thibodeau. Those guys are pressing, running, gunning. They got 10 guys that are really good, you know. So, but it is what it is. You got to play how the bracket comes out. You got to play those teams. And, you know, like the old Danny Broussard says all the time, to be the best, you have to beat the best, you know. So either the first round, the second round, the state championship game, if you want to go all the way, you got to beat some good teams.
The other two teams that are in it, they play one another. It's an 11-22 matchup. Nish versus Barb. What stands out the most to you about this year's Yellow Jackets team?
Well, as long as Todd Russ has been there, those guys, man, they get after it on defense. Those guys are attempting probably 15 to 20 charges a game, attempting.
Wow.
Now, they don't get all those charges, but they're flying around attempting. You know, the funny thing is the luxury of going to the district meeting on Monday, when the announcement came out, Nish and Barb didn't have – on their calculations, they didn't have each other playing. And when they came out, well, Barb played early in the year, lost by 40 over there at Nish, and he wasn't happy, you know. And Rush really wasn't that excited either because it's a second or third time you're going to play a team in a district.
I heard some of the fluctuation this year was about out of state in the way that wasn't factored
yes.
in. Was that your experience?
The last minute thing, yes. A couple of and Carver, if I'm not mistaken, being removed out of the 4A hurt some teams, I guess, because they might have played some 5A teams or vice versa. And, it was out-of-state calculations and something to do with Carver and maybe one other school getting moved
Crazy.
Out of the – you know. So it switched up last minute. You got Nish and Barb. Barb actually has a player that won MVP of the district who's really good, averaged about 20, 24 points a game. I don't think they can beat Nish at Nish. Russ is going to have that place. He's going to have his guys ready to go. So I look for a New Iberia to get by Barb in that first round.
We'll go to the Class 4A bracket, visiting now with Brad Boyd, head basketball coach at Southside High. We'll have to pick and choose a little bit here. Why? Because 9 of the 32 teams in this bracket are from area districts. We'll go with the defending champs, Coach Kovach and Karen Crow. They're the 5 seed. They're going to take on number 28 Pearl River. But what intrigues me, there's a very real chance, if chalk holds, that we'll have a rematch of last year's state title game, Karen Crow Woodlawn Shreveport, in the quarters for the right to go back to Lake Charles. Just brutal seating.
Yeah, that's a tough one. But I tell you what, though, I guarantee you the Shreveport of Woodlawn, who does have the 4 seed, I don't think they want to see Karen Crow. And Karen Crow might not want to see them as early as it is to go to the top 28, but that's how the brackets come out. And I look for Karen Crow, who is – I got to give credit to my guy Kovacs. Over the years, this guy has put in the work and the work and the work and got a system that works with his players now. And it just happened over the last couple of years, having some really, really talented groups of kids coming in 4 or 5 at a time, graduating,
yeah.
You know, losing 5 seniors to still get a 5th ranking in 4A, which I personally think 4A public side is the toughest class in all of sports for basketball. And but they just run college sets. Those kids run a lot of sets. They throw a lot of defensive schemes at you. And if you're not on par and not ready to counter, they're going to usually beat you. You know. So I look for Karen Crow. I even though they're a 5 seed, I still like Karen Crow going back to that semifinal game, at least making another trip to the top 28.
This is one of the most obvious statements I'll ever make on this show. But Joe Charles is a stud.
Yes.
He's highly recruited already. But here's the part that I want to make sure people understand. It's not a one-man band over there.
Not at
They've
all.
They've got good perimeter play. And I'll tell you right now, I think Julian Landor is the most underrated player in this area.
I will have to agree with you. Seen him firsthand when you called the game the other night. I really didn't know the kid. I think he might have been injured last year. And I usually know all the kids in the area that stand out are pretty solid. And when I seen this kid play, I was impressed. I mean, that kid made anywhere from 8 to 12 shots from 7 to 8 feet from the goal, which is – sounds close, yes, but those are tough shots with defenders, with 6'7", the Holstein guarding him, with other big guys guarding him, and he finished around the goal. And Kovacs and them like to run some sets on that baseline where they screen in on the zone. They'll double screen the man's on the zone. If you make any kind of switches, there's Landor in the middle, bang, and he scores easy buckets all game long, you know.
So we got other teams in this Class 4A bracket that have a chance to make a run. Bro Bridge, I want you to single out. They're the 3 seed. They've got Lutcher, and then also Westgate, the 6 seed. They have DeRitter. I have not seen Bro Bridge this year. I've had 2 different Westgate games. If they are shooting well, nobody in this bracket, in my opinion, could beat Oliver Winston's Westgate team. If they're shooting well from outside, but you and I know that's a little bit feast famine.
Yeah, I'm always impressed with Westgate over the years. I mean, and this year in particular, and a lot of people don't know this. I got a little inside scoop. I got good friends in some of these different cities, New Iberia being one. My good friend Brian Allen. Westgate has never really been full strength the whole year. They're just clicking over the last couple games where everybody is playing.
Whole team played football. That's part of it.
Exactly. And a couple guards were injured early on. Or a couple of them played and then got an ankle injury here or there. But the last couple games, you check the box score, those guys are pushing 90 points a game. So if they're hitting somewhat, you're going to have a hard time if you're a possession-by-possession team.
It doesn't matter if you play well offensively.
Yes. Yes. I talk to my bitty kids all the time. If my team shoots 20 times, Ben, and other team shoots 10, I can go 10 for 20. You got to go 10 for 10 just to maybe beat me, you know. So sometimes it's a good thing firing up those shots and you start hitting and you're off to the races.
How about Bro Bridge? Maybe a little more unexpected preseason, but wow, the way that they played, everybody had them on the radar probably about midway through the district slate.
I tell you what, completely different offensive mindsets between Westgate and Bro Bridge. And Coach Chad at Bro Bridge, I mean, a 3 seed at Bro Bridge in basketball, that's unheard of. You know, he's done a great job. He's a Russ disciple. He comes from coaching under Todd Russ, so he coaches the defense the same way. They're going to attempt a lot of charges. Anytime you can take a team with great athletes, which Bro Bridge has some good athletes, their point guard is really good. He runs the show for him, a kid by the name of Seth Alexander, who's really good. So I really like Bro Bridge on the simple fact that they're going to play defense. It's high school kids. It's hard for a high school team to shoot outstanding 3 games in a row to go to the top 28. So you happen to run into Bro Bridge and they put the clamps on you and they take in charges. You have to try to find different ways to score. Now you catch yourself in a 40 to 50 point game, and that's what Bro Bridge wants going into the playoffs, to keep that game in the 40, 50 points where they dominate on the defensive end.
We'll head now to the Class 3A bracket. And for time purposes, I'm going to highlight the highest seeded team, and that's number 5, Abbeville. I'm going to get you to educate me because they weren't on my radar coming into this season. But that is an incredibly impressive seed in this bracket. For example, Sophie B. Wright, world beaters, the number 1 seed. Peabody, we all know about the Warhorses, the 2 seed. Your 3 seed in this bracket, if I can count and find it here. I had it momentarily. Let's see here. Wassman, we know about them from North Louisiana. And then, oh, by the way, number 4, all they've done is win national state championships, should say the last 3 years, I think, Madison Prep.
Oh my.
And so in line after them is Abbeville. How did they get to that line, Coach?
Well, I might want to take back what I said about 4A being the toughest league. This 3A league is unbelievable. Oh, man, and going back to speak on the behalf of Abbeville, which I'm not sure if Coach Ham is a Hall of Famer yet, but I guarantee you Coach Berg Hamilton will be in the Louisiana Hall of Fame for high school basketball. Great coach, couple state championships at Patterson. Goes to Abbeville after, you know, stops along the way, and he has Abbeville right back in the top 5, which was predominantly known for football, you know, and, you know, to get a program like that, he's got some good athletes. They're another hard-nosed, tough team. They're going to D up, but they're also going to run and gun. They like to get after it. He is a very coach that's big on discipline, so his guys listen to him well. They change it up on defense and try to get you out of playing how you feel comfortable. And you never know, Abbeville sitting at the 5 seed, looking like they probably have to match up with Madison Prep to make a trip to the top 28, which is tough. I don't even know how do they rank Madison Prep 4. Some power points or whatnot, but that doesn't make sense to me.
Look at the 3 ahead of them. Sophie B. Wright,
yes.
Peabody.
Well, you're right. It's, you know, when you don't see Wassman a lot or know who they play, it's kind of, you know, and then it's, oh, it's Wassman. They're back in the top 28 every year. So it could be, you know, Madison Prep did catch a couple losses, maybe slip up a couple losses here and there. But, wow, I mean, 4 seed Madison Prep. I know Abbeville probably wasn't happy with that. And probably Sophie B. Wright as well. You know, going to have to match up with them probably in the semifinals.
So here's my game plan. We'll take a quick recess. Hate to go past Class 2A, Class 1A, but I got to save time for us to go into the select side. Brad Boyd going to stick around with us at the Tap Room River Ranch, and this is Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Back to work.
Okay, everyone, let's get back.
This is Acadiana's number 1 sports station.
And you're listening to Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
Live online at 103.7thegame.com.
Follow on Facebook and Twitter now
at 103.7 The Game.
Here we go. Ben Love joined for another segment by the coach Brad Boyd of Southside High School, the famous Clint D. He's inside the 237 Roof Studios. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game. All right, last we left off, time to jump on over to the select side. I'll skip Division One. We don't have any area teams there, but into Division Two, and your alma mater, defending champ St. Thomas More, the four seed. They draw Thomas Jefferson, but would it be interesting if Chalk held out and they got David Thibodeau in the Cougar Dome in the second round?
Well, it's probably going to end up being that matchup. St. Thomas More, I don't think, is going to have any problem with Thomas Jefferson. The seeds on this select side, 1 through 15, once you get past, probably, no disrespect to anybody, but if a 7, 8, 9, 10 seed makes the top 28, maybe I would eat crow. But 1 through 5, 1 through 6, that's where you're going to find your last four teams standing. And I look for that to be a great matchup. A lot of people, you know, come over from David Thibodeau, get a chance to play inside the Cougar Dome, get a chance to, play against a Hall of Fame coach like Danny Broussard and St. Thomas More, a prestige program for, you know, ever since we could all think about having basketball in this area. And that would be a good classic, Acadiana rivalry there.
That's a growing program in terms of size. Yes. With David Thibodeau, tell me a little bit about their background in the sport.
Yes, David Thibodeau came on. I want to say they might have started in Class B. I don't think they have football there still. Now they moved up to now we're in the Division II bracket. And Coach Hicks over there is a good coach, man. If you're not familiar with Coach Hicks, he knows the game. He runs different sets, you know. And a lot of times it depends on what kids come to your school, you know. And he's actually aligned some kids that – over the last couple of years that he's worked with, some freshmen turning into sophomores and juniors, and they run good stuff. You know, I don't think St. Thomas More, if they match up in that second round, is just going to run away with that game. I think it's going to be and you're playing St. Thomas More. And from what I've known, anybody that comes into STM, they want to beat them bad, bad, and they're going to play extremely hard. I mean, see how excited Karen Crow was to win that game at STM that night. If David Thibodeau handles business, and I look forward that St. Thomas More do the same, that'll be a great second-round matchup.
The winner of that one would advance to the semifinal, and they would get U High. And right now, Joe Spencer's team, surprise, surprise, they are the top overall seed. You and I had the call last year, U High St. Thomas More in the championship game. How might that go down this time around? I know that your guy, Pablo Mejia's son, is still there. He's still a three-point shooting machine. But what does that addition of the Cubs look like this year?
They are, just seeing a couple games that they played and talking with a good friend of mine, Pablo, and, his son is really shooting the ball really well. I mean, they're there, and it's Joe Spencer team.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a Danny Broussard team. They're going to have good players. They're going to run good plays. They're going to be well-disciplined. I'll let the cat out the bag. I go and watch Milan's highlights all the time because – I actually trained Milan early in his earlier days. I won't take credit for him being a great shooter because a shooter still has to shoot and put the ball in the hole. So I give him all the credit on that. But when I see a highlight of him making a three, Joe is always running a nice set. It's always a screen to screen. It's always a diversion to get a good look for Pablo. I mean, for Milan or other players on his team. So I have stole some sets from Joe Spencer. I can admit that. I mean, he runs really good stuff, and Milan is just shooting the ball really well. And they got some athletes on that team too, you know. So I look forward to it. For my alma mater, St. Thomas More, to get back to the top 28, and that would be a great semifinal matchup, U High and STM again. You never know. You never know. That's a tough one to call. You know, I won't make any predictions. Maybe we can do that game again, come down the road, and I'll make a prediction before the game, you know.
Our man, Joe Spencer, coming from basketball heaven, basically in Indiana, now coaching in Louisiana. That's like fishing with dynamite, man. He's just got too much inside knowledge. The guy is a great,
basketball coach. He is.
We'll go to Division III now. Only three area teams, and they're both going to fight an uphill, or they're all three, excuse me, going to fight an uphill battle to get to Lake Charles. But let's start 8-9 game. Boy, this one's a lot of fun on the football side. It's been the state title game the last 2 years. Notre Dame, Catholic New Iberia, the winner gets Dunham in the quarterfinals. But break down that 8-9 game.
Well, I'd like to see Louie and Indes go out and coach that game against each other where they could yell a little more. It's inside. You know, you probably can hear them yelling a little more. I think that would be pretty entertaining because the winner of the game got to play Dunham, and we know how that's going to end. Dunham is extremely good. Dunham, matter of fact, might be – if not the best team in the state of Louisiana in all classes, top five in my opinion. They are really good. They got some great players.
Another good coach there in Jonathan Pixley.
And another great coach, Pixley. Anytime, I say this all the time, anytime you can have good athletes and good skilled basketball players, and you mix that in with a good coach, it's a no-brainer why Dunham and St. Thomas More and Joe Spencer and Oliver Winston at Westgate always in the top of the mix. You know, it's just a winning combination. You put together the good players with the good coaches, there you go.
I know he's older than you, but I'm trying to see if the gap was that severe. You never played him when he was at Catholic or out at Sanford, did you, Jonathan Pixley?
No, I think he's I'll give Pixley the age on me. I think Pixley's maybe a year or two over 40. I don't want to put him too up in the age, but I don't remember. I remember most of the guys that I've played against, most of the guys that I've scored buckets on. I don't remember scoring too many buckets on Pixley or playing against him.
If I'm not mistaken, left Samford as the all-time leading three-point scorer in the program's history.
Well, there you go.
Duke
so we do have something in common.
There it is.
Cause, you know, because I'm the leading three-point maker at the University of Louisiana, and I have to rub that in with Pixley. See how many total threes he made. He might have made a little bit more than me. At Samford than I did at UL, but definitely I did not know that about him. I'm definitely going to bring that up when I see him again. I normally see him in the summer times at the complex in Baton Rouge that they run a little AU deal and program over there. We usually go there a couple times. Great guy, man. Really good coach, and love just talking with that guy whenever I do get a chance to meet him.
Speaking of guys we enjoy following, can't forget about Eric Mouton, the Blue Gators, Ascension Episcopal. This will be an uphill climb. They're the number 14 seed. They're at number 3 Episcopal. What do we know about the Episcopal Knights in that matchup?
You know, they're a top 3 seed in this division, which means they're pretty good. You know, and Eric, you know, losing his son who carried that program for years along with some good role players. Eric knows the deal. They're going to go out and prepare. They're going to play their hardest. His kids always going to play hard. They're going to take charges. They're going to do what Eric tells them to do. And like my dad always says, you still got to go play the game. You know, so Episcopal got to strap them up just like Ascension Episcopal does. Now, I would have to think that Episcopal will probably hold off the Blue Gators in that second round matchup. But definitely going to get a good fight from Coach Mouton and his team.
All right, we're going to finish up now. The Division IV bracket, the two-time defending champ, there's LCA. No surprise they are the number 1 seed. But if you look at the rest of that bracket, you've got 3 other area teams, Coach, as top 6 seeds. We're looking at number 4, Opelousas Catholic, number 6, VC, and then number 2 at the bottom of the bracket, Central Catholic of Morgan City. Let's take LCA out of the equation. Do you like the chances of any of these other 3 to get there and then maybe unseat the Knights?
It's going to be tough, man. LCA is extremely tough. They've knocked off 4A teams, 5A teams. They pretty much handled. I see the other teams that are the 2 seed, the 6 seed in that in the same district as them, speaking of Vermilion Catholic and Central Catholic, which they easily handle. Let's not BS it around any like that. But I look, you know, the matchup I really like, Ben, I really like Opelousas Catholic. Don't want to jinx them because they have a really good team this year. They knocked off North Central, who's on the public side.
Tell me about the young man who you've mentioned on this program before.
Oh, he's a dedicated, extremely, extremely talented athlete. Keon Coleman, he's a sophomore at Opelousas Catholic. He's pushing 6'3", 6'4". You know, he's in the gym. I just spoke to a friend of mine that said he just left the gym at Opelousas. We was talking about 5:30, 6 o'clock. The kid's still in the gym shooting shots and just preparing. And, you know, he look for that kid in the next couple years. I know I said I don't say this much about kids, but he is a special talent on the football field as well as the basketball court. And they have some other pieces over there. It's not your traditional Opelousas Catholic team. They have some good basketball players over there right now. Like I said, they beat North Central, who's a number 2 seed in that Class 1A division. So I would like that matchup. Lafayette Christian versus Opelousas Catholic. They played in the football playoffs. Lafayette Christian getting the better side of them there. But it could be a different story, especially when you get into that big arena.
That'd be a semifinal game.
It'd be a semifinal game. And back in my playing days, college days, we like to say when the big lights come on. So anything can happen when the big lights come on. But I like that matchup. Hopefully both teams can handle business and get there. That Lafayette Christian Opelousas Catholic matchup may be a doozy. Maybe an upset right there, and then I could be wrong. LCA could walk away with a big win. On the other side, I got to go with my guy, which he's not a local team, but my guy Hamilton Christian, my guy Dexter Washington.
Big fan here.
I've been knowing that guy since I was 8 years old. One of my good friends, you know, good guy. When I frustrated about referees or this and that, I always call Dexter. He's always calling me right away. Hey Brad, do this to do this. And I respect that guy. I take a lot of advice from him. But he has a really good player. He has a really good team. I wouldn't be surprised if it would be Opelousas Catholic Hamilton Christian in the finals, Lafayette Christian Hamilton Christian in the finals, because I don't think Vermilion Catholic or Central Catholic can stay with Hamilton Christian.
I think that Hamilton Christian team also ran undefeated through their district as well,
sure.
LCA over in Lake Charles. Coach, we've got about a minute, maybe a minute and a half left. The transition that you're going to have to go through with this program going into varsity ball next year, tell us about it.
Well, my kids, like we spoke last week, we spoke a couple weeks ago, but starting last week, we jumped right back in it. Full weight program with our football strength and conditioning guy, Coach Gary over at Southside, who does an extremely good job. This guy is getting the guys right. And then also the guys, they'll stay after school Tuesday, Wednesday. We lift weights early in the morning, 6:30, right as school starts. Get that out the way. After school, the guys will stay on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursdays. And they do this jumping routine, calisthenics, a lot of boxes, a lot of jump ropes, medicine balls. And it's only going to help them going forward to be in that 5A tough, tough district. And the guys know it. They know it. The football coach, Coach Fondo, he actually just talked to him today. But he tells me about every other day. He goes, man, Brad, your guys in there getting it. Like, speaking on behalf of the basketball guys, because sometimes programs, when they let the basketball guys start working with the football guys, they tend to maybe slack or not be fully committed. But he keeps reminding them that guys are fully committed. And, so it's just going to be hard work playing at that top level. We got some good pieces that we're going to keep continuing to work with. And, sky's the limit, man. Sky is the limit at Southside. We got a lot of good things to work for us, good things going for us. So we'll see how it goes next year.
Your kid's putting in the work. Brad Boyd putting in time for us. Coach, we appreciate it.
Yes,
with
sir.
Any luck, you and I might get to do some work in Lake Charles. We'll hope the area teams get there. Thank you, brother.
As always, thank you, Ben.
All right, we got to hang it up for now. We're coming back in. We can take your phone calls. You're listening to Bumper Sports live from the Tap Room River Ranch on 103.7 The Game.
One of them is famous in Cajun country. The other has a set of pipes that never quits. Seriously, we've tried before.
Cork. Now the tape.
Together, Ben and Clint bring you home on 103.7 The Game.
Oh, 35 minutes after 6 o'clock. Right back with more B2BS. That's Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game. Got to give it up for my man Brad Boyd. That was fantastic. We've got Twitter. We've got text lines blowing up. They appreciate the high school basketball love. And we've got at least, this cracks me up, we've got at least one respondent on Twitter to the Sing or Swim question of the day. And he's got no love, and I mean none whatsoever, for people that are using Zion Williamson's injury last night to vilify the NCAA. If you want to crack on the NC2A, be my guest. I do it all the time. But this isn't the jump-off point for that. I don't understand at all why people are using this to say they forced the kid to play a year and look, he got hurt. The NCAA didn't make some crappy Paul George Nike shoe and then put a 285-pound man into a shooting guard shoe that literally is put on retail racks in the mall, sells for less than $100, and is meant for people who play on the perimeter. How is that the NCAA's fault? And so I'm going to give some respect here. Brad Newell on Twitter, his response, how many Hall of Fame players played 3 to 4 years of college basketball and went on to long careers? These punks whining about one and done, take away their 60,000-plus free rides and make them get a all-caps real job. Then you'll really hear some crying, spoiled punks. Clint, that's as good as we've gotten in a while, at least on Twitter.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think Brad Newell just brought the heat there, full-blown, brother. That was great to hear.
I appreciate the response. Let's go get some more feedback, this time via the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Ken, good to have you back, man. How are you today?
I'm doing pretty good, and I trust you've been doing very good as well.
I am. I got to tell you, I know that people had to take a break from this show a little bit after the Saints NFC title game, so I understand that, but I think we're all healing now.
No doubt about it. Two things. Number one, I don't care about the shoes or whatever. My question to you, if nobody asked it, if they did, I got in late. My question to you, if you, his parents, did you sit down with Coach K and say, look, it's time to shut it down like a la Nick Bosa at the Ohio State and prepare for the NBA and just shut it down? He's going to be the number one pick.
I'll tell you
this. We know that.
Yes, well, yes, he will. And so, look, for the same reason that I told you that Devin White shouldn't even remotely think about coming back to LSU, yes, I think Zion Williamson should not play again if he's not 100%. But on the other side, Ken, if he is 100%, it'll be interesting to see how much winning a national championship or that possibility means to the kid. Because, look, you listen to this show a lot. You and I talk a lot on this program. So you know my feelings on the subject. We're only 3 to 5 years away from a kid saying, no, the college football playoff isn't enough for me to stick around. I've been injured this year. I'm done. If Zion Williamson is 100%, and I'm sure the Duke medical staff would never tell us as much, but if he is and opts not to play, we'll be seeing exactly what I described ahead of schedule on the basketball side.
Right. And a guy that's going to be a number one pick, no doubt about it. You know, I mean, that's something to not just say, well, no, I love the game, I'm going to play. No, no, you're looking at gazillions of dollars, signing bonuses, everything. When you enter the NBA, everybody know that. But, again, you know, there's other ears that are coming in and say, look, you said you was going to play for us for 1 or 2 years. You need to own that obligation. You know how this stuff goes. But, anyway, moving on, LSU, disappointed with them last night, gave up too many threes in the end, and – you know, just didn't play good enough to win the ball game. Yeah, it went in overtime, but they just didn't do well enough to win the win the basketball game.
Ken, my thoughts are fairly simple there, and I've said it a few times before in the 5 o'clock hours. But thanks for bringing me back to it in this hour because I wanted to do this. I think that LSU last night proved that if they have to play a game that's slowed down in tight quarters, they could be in trouble in March, but that doesn't necessarily have to be the case. Wade said last night after the game, and I love this quote, Ken. He said, our season's going to end with a game exactly like this, basically, unless we find a way in the next 3 weeks to figure out how to operate in tight quarters, figure out how to operate offensive sets in the half court that aren't always initiated by Trey Waters, and then lock the hell down defensively when it matters. So they've got some time to figure it out. Last night, yeah, look, they showed some symptoms of problems, but anybody that's jumping off the bandwagon after last night doesn't get how college basketball works, in my opinion.
Well, yeah, well, I'm not jumping off the bandwagon. I just was not satisfied with what they did last night.
Oh, no doubt. I know you.
Yeah, and so anyway, but thank you for taking my call. You know, I got in late, so, you know, I hadn't been calling lately, but trust me, it's going to pick back up.
Love it. Love it. Ken is in, and he's ready to come back in at will. We're going to take another call here momentarily, but before we do, Clint, if you thought the Twitter response was strong from Brad Newell, and it was, Zach Sprayberry would like to be heard from as well. Nike is diligently searching all their sweatshops in China, looking for the 8-year-old that is responsible for what led to the sneaker blowing out on Zion. I've seen some of that type of rhetoric as well, CD. I know the Onion's got a story about something similar, too. So that is the high heat there from our man Zach. All right, let's take one more call, and then we got to take our final break of the show. Back out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Scott, welcome in. I know you want to talk Zion Williamson. Feels like I'm dealing with about a one Mississippi delay, so excuse that. But, Scott, what you got for us?
Yeah, you know, everybody's real quick to say what this kid needs to do, just like everybody's real quick to be the armchair coach of every game that has a bad call. Has anybody ever stopped to think to ask him what he wants to do? Everybody's like, oh, he needs to sit out. He needs not to. He's going to get hurt. Everybody's just worried about how much money they can make on games that they bet on when he's playing, is what it seems like. How about we ask the kid what he wants to do now that it's happened to him, how he actually feels about it?
I completely agree with you. And Scott, you just said exactly what our regular Wednesday guest, college basketball analyst Brian Snow, tweeted right after the game. Whatever Zion wants to do from here on out is right for him. Now, I will tell you this. I agree with everything you just said, but I also know the way that our society works. And right, wrong, or indifferent, I'm telling you, if the kid is 100% healthy and decides not to play another minute in a Duke uniform, which is his prerogative, you and I agree, but if he does that, he will be vilified on every radio, TV, and newspaper outlet in this country. I could see that coming from a mile away if that's what happens.
Completely agree. You're exactly right.
And it's a bit of a shame that it is that way. Scott, you know I appreciate the call. Thanks for weighing in. But Scott's opinion is really the only one that should matter, because he's right. Brian Snow 247 was right last night with what he tweeted. Whatever Zion wants to do from here on out is right. If he's healthy enough to play and he wants to play again, he should. if he's not healthy enough to play, or he has some concerns, he has to get a second opinion even, then he shouldn't play. If his family decides one way or the other, roll with that. If he had wanted to play in Europe leaving high school, that would have been fine too. Brandon Jennings did it. Emmanuel Mudiay went to China. It happens. I'm okay with that too. College ain't for everybody, baby. But both of those guys I just mentioned, Brandon Jennings, I believe in Italy, Emmanuel Mudiay in China, those guys made it to the show. Is everybody that chooses that route and doesn't go to college, are they all going to be that lucky? Are they all going to make really that much money in what would be their freshman year instead of playing professionally overseas or in Asia? Maybe. Maybe not. But Scott's right. Should be up to the kid. All right, we're going to take our final break of the show. I love the calls coming in during the 6 o'clock hour. Pepper one or two more in, would you? 706-0111. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports. We'll be back in for the final time on 103.7 The Game.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
And you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
Live online at 103.7thegame.com.
Get in on the conversation.
Call on the game hotline.
706-0111.
706-0111.
Waking up in the morning, gotta thank God. I don't know, but today seems kinda odd. No barking from the dog, no smog. And mama cooked the breakfast with no hug. I got my grub on, but didn't think.
There's the cube. That means that we are back in. 10 minutes until 7 o'clock. You're listening to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game. Ken, Scott, both in since 6:30. You want to get one in at the buzzer? Come join the party. We've got a lot of conversation in the last hour. 706-0111. Ken wanted to talk a combo of the Zion Williamson injury, the post-op there, and some LSU basketball. Scott goes in on outsiders telling Zion Williamson what he should do. So we got plenty of room if you want to hop on there, or we've spent time today on Cajuns football. They've scheduled Texas as an away game in Austin to kick off the 2021 season, and also they're going to play at Minnesota in what looks like it would be about week 4 of the 2023 season. And looky here, CD. I spent so much time talking with my guy Brad Boyd, high school basketball this hour, I totally missed some breaking news from Tim Buckley of the Daily Advertiser. Speaking of the Cajuns, let's get down to brass tacks on Cajuns baseball. According to Tim Buckley, Gunnar Leger will not start Friday at Sam Houston State. A Cajun spokesman told Buckley that it is rest, it is not an injury or re-injury. The spokesman said that Gunner will be ready to throw March 1st versus Maryland. Very, very interesting. So Gunnar Leger, on the shelf all of last year, comes back, throws 5 innings, doesn't get the win, but puts the Cajuns in position to get a dub against Texas last Friday. And they go on the road to face a former Cajun assistant, Matt Deggs, and the Sam Houston State Bearcats, and Gunnar Leger is going to be out. On the surface, that doesn't look good. Can you believe the spokesman at this point that it's not an injury or re-injury? Boy, I sure hope so, but at this point we don't exactly know. So, Clint, as far as what that's going to do to the Cajuns' rotation, according to the spokesman, which I'm going to have to assume at this point is Matt Sullivan, but nonetheless, Buckley reporting that Austin Perrin will get the start Friday, tomorrow night in the opener at Sam Houston State. That Dalton Horton, TCU transfer, is going to move up from Sunday. He'll start the Saturday game. And the Sunday starter for UL is still your boy, Clint, Taco Bell Anderson, TBA, to be announced. So what do you make out of this news? No Leger this weekend. Right now they say he's on track to pitch March 1 against Maryland. And Austin Perrin with an opportunity that he normally wouldn't get, perhaps.
Exactly. I think we're going to wind up seeing Austin Perrin kind of – he's going to have to make the most of that opportunity, Ben, because he's the guy that I feel like – I want to see him do well, but it's just – It's going to be tough up against Matt Deggs and his crew because Sam Houston State Bearcats, they've been on a roll as of late in the last couple of seasons. So I'm looking forward to seeing what he does against a pretty decent offense in Sam Houston State. And Dalton Horton, I think there was no surprise there. He was going to move up to Saturday because of the fact that he looked so good on Sunday in that series finale against Texas. You got to kind of put him in there in that Saturday role because Saturday had left a lot to be desired. And Sunday, your guess is as good as mine who's going to be the starter for that series finale on Sunday.
Yeah, and look, we learned last time that Brandon Young was a guy that they wanted to start a weekend game. He did, and it didn't go well. All right, so what exactly is coming next for Brandon Young? That, he'd be my guess, to be honest with you. I think Brandon Young is maybe the most likely option there. But then again, it depends on how they want to use Brock Batty, who was great as a reliever on Saturday against Texas. So could he factor in as a starter on Sunday? Time will tell. One other note. We're winding down the show, and it occurs to me that we've sliced and diced this whole Zion Williamson thing to death about the kid, the NCAA, the shoes, should he play again, everything. There's one avenue that we haven't really explored yet, and shame on me for burying it a couple minutes ago in the program. So is he still going to be the number one pick in the draft? And even if he is that really who the Pels want? Should they earn a draft pick, one, two, or three, or should they trade with, say, the Celtics, the Knicks, or somebody that could go and fetch them a top two or three overall pick? Because that's a fascinating topic here as well. Last night might have changed the fortunes of the top of that NBA draft. I'll tell you this. I'm not losing one millisecond of sleep if the Pelicans end up with R.J. Barrett or Ja Morant instead of Zion Williamson. I'm really not. The Pels have tried to build their franchise through a big. It happened with Anthony Davis, and I'm not saying that Zion is that same type of player. He's not. He's more physical than Anthony, but he probably doesn't shoot it as well. Still, if you could potentially show me a backcourt of Ja Morant and Jason Tatum and Drew Holiday sticks around, I'll take my chances from there that I'll attract some big man talent. And if you look around the association, there are plenty of teams that are getting to and even through a couple rounds of the playoffs as being guard heavy. Look at what Portland has done. And I know that the Pelicans swept them out of the first round last year, but Portland with C.J. McCollum and Dame Lillard, I mean, that's what they are, is a guard-oriented team. They've got Yusuf Nurkic, so they're serviceable down low. But really, I mean, that's a guard-heavy team. The Warriors, by and large, I know that they've had some bigs. They got Boogie Cousins now. They've had Andrew Bogut in championship years, but the Warriors are an offensive-oriented team around the perimeter. I think a Ja Morant, Jason Tatum, Drew Holiday trio would be tremendous for the Pelicans, and I don't mind R.J. Barrett either, so I guess I wanted to throw that wrinkle in, and maybe more time needs to be spent there tomorrow, CD, but the idea that maybe Zion Williamson won't be the first overall pick anymore if this knee sprain is something serious, no indication that it is.
Yeah, I'm seeing
the idea that the Pels are hell-bent on trying to land him. I'm sorry, go ahead, bud.
No. I was just going to say that I believe I saw earlier that they announced it was just a day-to-day type thing. You're kind of just seeing how it goes the next couple of games.
Yeah. But it kind of just further cements an idea to me that I've been wanting to say on the show. Williamson in a Pelicans uniform wouldn't be a bad thing at all. The star power would be there, but boy, I'm not sure if they'd be as well off going that route as some of the others that might just be afforded to them. Ended up being a pretty busy show with a couple of different audibles thrown in on a Thursday. I do want to thank our guest that stopped by in person. He's still here, and, you know, I appreciate it. Coach Brad Boyd of the Southside High Sharks. They're moving from the JV to the varsity level, and he's got a program on the come up. He also had some really stellar takes and a preview of the select and non-select boys basketball playoff brackets. If you missed it, go check it out on demand. 1037thegame.com. We've got an on-demand tab on the toolbar. You go to the free 1037 The Game mobile app, and you'll also find an on-demand option as part of that toolbar. And then in the 4 o'clock hour, Hunt Palmer talking LSU baseball, little LSU hoops as well. A couple of great guests. Jeff Horchek of KLFY. We missed you, brother. You better run it back next week. We'll be here tomorrow. I'll be back inside the 237 Roof Studios with Clint. Looking forward to an interview with James Moran, scene setter for LSU baseball. Enjoy your evening. We'll catch you tomorrow at 4. For Clint, I'm Ben, and this has been Bumper to Bumper Sports, live from the Tap Room, River Ranch, on 103.7 The Game.